Hello, everyone. Welcome back to I See What You're Saying, the Disciplined Listening Podcast. I'm Michael Reddington, and today it is my pleasure to welcome our next guest, Dr. Julian Miravelle. Dr. Miravelle is a professor at the University of Arkansas at Little Rock. He is the founder of the Positive Communications Network, author of Positive Communications for Leaders, and an award-winning scholar who has spent his entire career researching and teaching effective and ethical communication techniques. I'm really excited to dive into this conversation and share plenty of lessons from his work and specifically his wheel of positive communication. And we're going to discuss a wide range of topics, including first and foremost, how all leaders truly are in the communications business. We'll talk about the impact of great greetings, the power of focusing on other people's perspectives first, effects of both compliments and criticisms, and how to design frameworks to make better communication-related decisions, something I think we all, myself included, can most certainly use. I'm really excited to dive into this conversation today, and thank you so much for taking the time to join us. But before we do, we want to take a quick moment to thank our sponsors. Of course, we have HumanTel. For everybody who is interested in developing the ability to identify when people's emotions are shifting, and what that likely means for their thoughts and feelings at the moment in context of the situation, please head over to humantel.com and check out their wide array of online self-paced training opportunities to help recognize when people's facial expressions and nonverbal behavior likely indicate a shift in emotion. I highly recommend all their training. I've done it myself. And when you're there, you can enter the code INCLUSIVE25 for 25% off of all of their online training. That's over at humantel.com. I highly recommend it. For the professional interviewers in the audience, please head over to certifiedinterviewer.com. That's where you can learn more about the International Association of Interviewers, what qualifies for membership, the benefits, the seminars, the in-person events, the online events, the resources, the legal updates, everything that's there, the networking opportunities for professional interviewers. And of course, while you're there, you can learn all the news and updates about the next generation of the Certified Forensic Interviewer designation, what that likely means for you and your career, and what it takes to qualify, pass, and maintain the designation. All of that and more at certifiedinterviewer.com. And while you're online, stop over at inclusive.com. Inclusive.com is where you can learn more about the programs that our clients ask us to customize for their senior leaders, sales teams, and HR teams to teach them the skills, perspectives, and techniques necessary to obtain the everyday confessions in all of their conversations to help build stronger relationships and make better business decisions. That's over at Inclusive.com. I appreciate y'all taking the time to join us today. Thank you very much. And now, without further ado, I introduce to you Dr. Miravelle. Good morning, Julian. It is great to meet you. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Hey, nice to see you, Michael. Thanks for having me on the show.
It is my pleasure. And I was really excited when we connected online because of just the title of your work right out of the gate, Positive Communication for Leaders. And in a world where we are besieged by negativity on all sides at all times, I felt, even before I dove into it, I felt that the concept of positive communication would be so important. And I could be accurately described or accused of being a pragmatist. So even for me, like balancing what really needs to be done versus positive communication, I think intuitively, I see the value, but I'm really excited to talk through it. So I have read your book, Positive Communication for Leaders. And right in the beginning, you talk about how you believe positive communication is at the heart of positive leadership. If you don't mind starting here, I would love it if you could take a few minutes and walk us through what you mean by that.
Yeah, thanks so much. Well, really great to be with you. And I'm excited to share some of these ideas with your audience. You know, so the first thing I get, by the way, is when people ask me, like, what do you do? I'm like, well, I'm a professor and my expertise is positive communication. The first response always is, man, we need a lot more of that. And I could not agree more. So for me, you know, if you look at the basic definition of leadership, it's the ability to influence others. And there's lots of ways of doing that. But I think what distinguishes positive leadership from other approaches is that the way to get to outcomes is by inspiring people, often by modeling and by calling people to their better self, right? You can influence people negatively, or you can influence people positively. And so in the book, essentially, you know, when I say positive communication is at the heart of positive leadership, that's because, one, it's impossible to be a leader in to not communicate, right? So if I said, okay, go be a leader and stop communicating, it would be impossible for you to do that. That would take away your interactions. It'd take away your nonverbal behaviors. It'd take away your ability to text, to email, to exchange information. So for me, positive communication is so critical because it's a way of communicating. So I really think of it in my mind as a way of being through communication that has particular kinds of elements, which I'm sure we're going to dive into here in a little bit. So in short, positive communication is at the heart of positive leadership because in order to inspire people, in order to influence people, you're going to have to draw on certain types of communication behaviors versus others. It's all about making choices. And in the book, we really outline ways of making those choices, ways of communicating that are going to get you there.
Fantastic. And for me, one of the things that I love is the combination of the research and the practical aspects of what you do and what you teach. So you mentioned being a professor, and there's a lot of research that goes into your book, but you also work with businesses and leaders and organizations as well. So there's the practical aspect. So really, at least from the outside, it looks like your work bridges the gap of those two worlds.
Yeah, thanks so much. I mean, that's probably one of the best compliments I've received in a long time. You know, I mean, I am a researcher, and I was trained very well. When I got my PhD at the University of Colorado at Boulder, which at the time was one of the top communication programs in the world. But at my heart, I always wanted for what we were learning about communication to be having a practical impact. First in my life, to be honest, right? I'm not just learning communication to talk about it. I want to improve my relationships. I want to improve what's going on in my family. I want to improve what's going on in my workplace. So we really tried with this book in particular to make it both grounded in research, grounded in theory, but also applicable to everyday life and to be able to do that. So thanks so much for the compliment, because it really is important to me to make it practical. The other thing I would say is, you know, is I've been in the trenches. So in addition to being a researcher and teaching this stuff, I have been in leadership roles. I've been a chair very young. I was an associate dean, also very young. I was probably one of the youngest dean. I was dean for 3 years at the age of 37. So that just gives you a kind of sense. Okay, I was on the ground leading a college of 1,600 people with students, faculty, staff, et cetera. So we want, I think when you're in those roles, you understand that you can't do anything without beginning to think a little bit more deeply about how you communicate, whether that's a conversation with your employee or meeting with a student or meeting with the donors. The way you interact with others really matters, takes on an additional weight.
It matters so much. And for me, in a lot of the work that I do, and actually, I was joking with this. We recorded another episode yesterday, and I was joking with the guest who was on. You know, when people say, "Well, I shouldn't have to do that," well, okay, pat yourself on the back. You're right. You probably shouldn't have to, but you do. So, congratulations on identifying the right way forward. And when it comes to giving the extra thought to communication, a lot of leaders got to where they are because of their technical expertise or because their ability in a certain aspect of the business. And I'm not taking anything away. They earned their spot. They earned where they are. But communication wasn't always the main focus. So when you think about the stress that leaders face every day from all angles, having to take a moment and think about how we're going to communicate can feel sometimes like wasted time, or can feel like an unnecessary step, or can feel like it's down the priority list, when in reality, we can solve so many problems before they start if we just thought about how we communicate about the issue with somebody else.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's so interesting. And like a couple of weeks ago, I was just like having a dinner with a bunch of other people. And in the span of like 30 minutes, several people came to me. It was like performance evaluation time, right? So it's like, here we are, we have to evaluate employees. And like multiple cases in the same evening of people talking to me behind the scenes and saying, man, I'm dreading this. I can't, but you know, I've got to go, I've got this hard conversation. I've got to go have my employee and I don't know how to do it. And there are several problems there, right? It's like, one, you shouldn't wait until the performance evaluation to have hard conversations. Two, there are strategies that you can use every day to try to manage these conversations more effectively. And we have principles now that can help us get there. So yeah, if you are, I mean, part of our argument in the book, right, is that if you are in the business of leadership, you are in the business of how you communicate, because that's essentially 99% of your job now is managing people, leading your team, calling a sense of vision, being able to inspire people to better outcomes, creating a plan for the next 5 years, you know, et cetera, dreaming big. All of those skills are going to require your ability to communicate effectively from, you know, interpersonal writing, public speaking, et cetera.
There is no doubt about it. And you mentioned the principles that you have. So yep. In your work, you have the wheel of positive communication. Hopefully I'm using the title right. I'm always embarrassed when I try to quote something and I slightly screw it up.
No, you got it.
All right. Bullet dodged. So as we go through the conversation, and I'm sure we have the time to touch on each of them briefly, and we don't have to go in order or anything like that. But I really appreciated the wheel. I love how you broke it down and gave the visual reference and then a framework to go through it all. But right out of the gate, and my bias here entirely, so I will share this and then get all the way out of the way. But I believe that the greeting, how you start a conversation, does not get enough attention in how communication is taught. We can set the vibe, we can set the tone, how we introduce ourselves to somebody in the first 100 milliseconds, give or take, whatever it is, sets the level for how this conversation is likely going to go from here forward. And I feel like that's an opportunity that a lot of people miss. And I was ecstatic when I opened your book and it was one of the very first things you talk about when you get into the wheel. Yeah. So now I'm done. And I would love for you, if you don't mind, to at least talk about that first stage in the wheel, the create stage, and the important role the greeting plays and beyond.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, to backtrack a little bit. So the reason why I developed this model, you know, and kind of in research, I call it the model of positive communication. In everyday life, I'm going to call it the wheel of positive communication. But I developed it in 2014. And the idea was to try to develop a model that could help people in practice make better decisions about how they communicate. We've got lots of information in our field about what communication competency is or good communication is. But there's really not a unifying framework that we can teach other people where we say, oh yeah, these are the central behaviors that you might want to think about and reflect on as a way to advance the way you interact with other people. Because the truth is, you know, we're not all bad communicators. We're actually very sophisticated in the way that we engage with other people. Look at what we're doing today here without much training. You know, we've received quite a bit of training, but you know, I guess what I'm trying to say is, I developed the model to try to help us move forward. And you're right. So the first behavior really focuses on greeting. The principle in the model is that when we greet, we have the ability to create human connection. And out of all the behaviors in my model, it's the one that people, for some reason, love. Like, I'm not surprised that you're saying this, because people really haven't thought very much about the impact of greetings and how important they are, one in everyday interaction, right? So what can I tell you about it? For me, that piece of the model means several things. So on the one hand, it means that as a leader, you pay attention to how you open up interaction and your ability to create connection, right? So in everyday interaction, we have kind of either we can move towards people or we withdraw from interaction. Like, I'll give you an example. I was in Costa Rica giving a training on positive communication there. In the fall, and I'm sitting at a bar in the evening after one of the trainings, and I'm eating by myself. So there's a Japanese person who comes and sits right next to me. And because we were both sitting kind of there eating by ourselves, we struck a conversation, engaged with each other. What turns out, he's kind of an executive for a very large Japanese firm. He actually is settled in Colombia, but does work in Costa Rica. Okay, so high level executive. And in the middle of this conversation, he turns to me and he says, you know, I've got to tell you, I'm having this huge paradigm change in my life. I feel like I've been a terrible leader all my life, you know, until very recently. And he gave me some examples. And one of them was when I would go to the office in the morning, he said, you know, if I would see my colleagues, I wouldn't even say hi. I would just walk right past them. I would go straight to my desk. I'd get in front of my computer and I'd start working on my tasks. And he said, even when people came into the office to drop off documents, I would barely even acknowledge them. And then I would keep working. So they would drop the documents and he'd be on his computer typing away. Okay. What a powerful story. And then he told me the transformation. He says, you know, I can't be like that. I'm treating people as objects. It's just, you know, he went into a cycle of kind of really changing who he was. It was really inspiring. I couldn't believe I was listening to this story as I was giving talks to people about this. So to me, the model kind of speaks to that, right? As a leader, when you come into a space, you have a choice. You know, are you going to move towards people? Are you going to introduce yourself, say hello, do a brief small talk? Or are you going to avoid these interactions? And in the world of positive leadership, you're going to have to move towards people. It's kind of the argument of the book. So that's kind of one approach. The other is more kind of specific, right? So, you know, like the behavior of greeting. So for example, when you're sending emails to people, do you have a greeting in there? Are you conscious about what that greeting is doing? Is it a warm greeting? Is it a cold greeting? Is it objectifying people? So those are all the things I want people kind of thinking about when they think about that principle and that behavior. Are you moving towards people? Are you initiating the greeting? Are you creating opportunities for connection? As a leader, the higher you go, the more you've got to build relationships across stakeholders. So you've got to be the initiator. Or if there's a conflict happening with one of your, you know, with one of your colleagues, let's say one of your direct reports, you have a hard conversation, it doesn't go well, what do you do next? Most people, they're going to basically give you the silent treatment, right? 65% of employees report being given the silent treatment as a way to punish them. So that's ineffective. And it certainly doesn't solve the problem. So once again, you got to return to this idea of greeting, which is, can you find a way to reconnect with this person? So I want to stop here because I don't want to get too far. And I want to see what's going on as I'm sharing some of these ideas with you.
I love it. What you can see is going on is me taking notes while you're talking. I love all of it. And even just shaking my head as I hear you talk about people using the silent treatment as punishment.
Yeah.
One of the thoughts that crossed my mind in general in life is under stress, we often go to what we know. What are we comfortable with? How do I get this stressful feeling away? And for many leaders, communication isn't necessarily what they're comfortable with. And for most human beings, hard conversations is certainly not what we're comfortable with. And our backgrounds are different. And for a large part of my career, you could say hard conversations was what I got paid to do. I don't mind doing them, but I'll be honest, if I don't have to, that's my preferred option. I feel like I'm equipped to do it and ready to do it. But if I don't have to, that's a less stressed day for me. So that, you know, that's okay.
That's great.
So in these scenarios where people gravitate towards the work as opposed to towards the people, or maybe gravitating towards an email when a handshake and a conversation would be much more effective, or even a phone call would be much more effective. Part of that, I feel like, is getting over the stress and prioritizing. I think I heard you say this earlier, prioritizing the outcome over the moment. So in this moment right now, I'm feeling the stress that I'd rather not feel. So if I make a decision, you talked about making better communication decisions. If I make a decision based on relieving the stress, that satisfies the short term, but likely compounds the long-term issue. If I can stay focused on the outcome, now I can make better decisions to start addressing the long-term outcomes and hopefully reduce the chance of similar stress happening again.
Yeah. Well, and I think one of the key outcomes that leaders need to keep in mind is relationship and the relationship that they have with the people around them and how they are cultivating them, how they are affecting them. Because, you know, so we start the book. I'll just give you a little bit of an analogy, right? So in the book, we start with this story. I'm French by origin. I was born in Paris. I actually was an exchange student in high school. So I came when I was 15 years old. I came to the United States to learn English and I landed in the middle of nowhere. They call it Iowa, I think. And, you know, I was stayed with a host family, et cetera. So, but anyway, so I was raised in France, and so people love soccer there. When the World Cup comes around, I just kind of transform into this huge soccer fan. We start the book with the story of the general manager for the French team. You know, as you know, the French team won the World Cup, 6 years ago, but they almost had a chance to win it against Argentina, and they didn't. But still, it's an amazing feat, right? They are on top of the world in terms of their performance as a team. Well, one thing caught my attention in the last World Cup, which was all these articles were coming out about how much people loved working with Didier Deschamps, who is the general manager for the French team. He was a world champion when he was a player in 1998. And then he's the basically the leader who helped this team twice almost win a World Cup championship. They won it the first time and they almost won it the second time. But there's this really powerful example where one of the key players on the team, Antoine Griezmann, one of the best strikers in the world, essentially says this. He says, you know, every time I play as a thank you to Didier Deschamps because of what he's done for me in my life as a leader. So we start the book with this whole story because to me, it encompasses two things. One, if you're a leader, you obviously want to create extraordinary outcomes, right? So there are organizational goals we're all trying to get to. And if you're in a leadership role, you've got to have that. But the second piece is that I love about the story and all the details that we share in there is that the way to get there is by creating these extremely meaningful relationships with people that actually are going to go way past the goals, right? So that friendship between the players and Didier, it will never go away. That's going to be the stable entity. Winning and losing will go away, but not the relationship. So I don't know if that helps in any way, but I thought I would put that in there for you.
No, that definitely helps. And when you think about using that as an analogy for business, there's going to be good days and bad days. There's going to be deals we win and deals we lose. There's going to be things exactly. We agree on, we disagree on. There's going to be days where we're flush with money and days where we're scraping by. But if we, over time, we work to create those relationships, then those relationships can be the stable entity that helps us navigate those stormy seas. So I think that's a perfect story to share.
Yeah.
And go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm listening.
I didn't want to cut you up. So when we talk about building relationships, and especially as leaders, solving problems, gathering information, making decisions, and I do feel like efficiency is the arch enemy of great communication, but let's be honest, efficiency guides a lot of decision-making every day in businesses around the world. You sure. Talk a lot about asking questions, and I believe the discovery stage of your model or your wheel. Yep. And I do feel like a lot of leaders ask questions with the best of intentions. Sure. But those questions either come across as accusatory or limiting and then end up creating suboptimal results, fueling further frustration down the line. So I would love it if you had some ideas or techniques that you could share about that discovery or inquiry process that leaders can help inject your positive communication principles into their questions.
Yeah. So, you know, so that's the second principle of the model. I propose that when we ask questions, we actually put ourselves in a position of discovery. For me, it's actually related to a stance of humility. And I found the whole thing, that this idea that the way we ask questions impactful, really fascinating for a number of reasons, but one of them is very practical, is that all of our interactions are shaped by questions, right? So right now, even this encounter that me and you are having, it's because we understand that I'm going to talk and you're going to talk, but what's going to lead the conversation is our ability to come up with some questions, particularly even more on really on your side.
Thanks for the pressure.
So, but it turns out that not all questions serve the same function. So there are questions that, as you point out, can really limit, can control the interaction, can narrow down the responses. So sometimes when I do talks, I'll take somebody in the audience, and I'll say, hey, do you like the color blue or the color yellow? And they're like, choose, you know, they're like, I like yellow. Well, and I always like to say, well, all the things that I could learn about you, I have made you, I have forced you to respond with just a couple words, right? And that's not us. It's just the way interaction works. If you ask a close-ended question, which I did, do you like the color blue or yellow, which forces a particular answer, then the next person is going to answer it in that way. So if you start with this premise, there's a contrasting question that really is helpful. And the contrast is what we call open-ended question. It's a super simple concept, right? Open or closed. But it's so impactful in the way that we interact, because if you start to pay attention to your own interactions, I don't have to put a lot of money on this, but I guarantee it that you're asking way too many closed-ended questions. So in the book, we try to show how, as a leader, you can go on this journey of using the power of open-ended questions in a number of contexts. For example, let's say you're starting a meeting with your team. One option is you go, okay, we got to get to work, people, and you go straight to the task, right? But what if you could start that meeting instead with a quick open-ended question? Hey, before we get to the task, let's go around the table and each person tell me what's one moment that gave you a great sense of joy at work recently? And then you just ask people to share. It doesn't have to take 30 minutes. You know, you just ask people to share a quick example of something that maybe was meaningful for them. Or perhaps you start the meeting by saying, hey, what's something that you're really having a challenge with today that maybe we can bring this to the team as something to talk about? So what you're noticing is the impulse is very different. You can start the meeting by telling people what to do and focusing on the task, or you can start the meeting with really injecting some moment of discovery, putting yourself as a leader in a position of curiosity. So that whole, really the chapter and the thinking behind it is that that's going to have an immediate impact, right? If you go to your employee and they report to you, and all you do is ask closed-ended questions, you'll never get to know them. But if you begin to inject questions like, well, you know, what have you been doing for fun this weekend? How's your family doing? That's going to give you knowledge about what's going on with them, which, by the way, is only going to help you as a manager and as a leader. So there are a lot of other strategies we talk about, like how you can use open-ended questions during annual evaluation in particular, because there are some techniques that are really critical there, all the way to kind of how we managed difficult conversations. I did a workshop 2 weeks ago, and the whole thing really was for difficult conversations. One of the most meaningful tools is being able to ask open-ended questions that are not accusatory, because what creates defensiveness is accusation. Thoughts.
And what people feel is an accusation versus what the questioner feels as an accusation can be two That's entirely right. different things. There's plenty of times, and I have no doubt you've seen this thousands of times, where a leader or somebody who's in the position of inquiry asks a question that they feel is fair, is fact-based. It helps get them information they need to solve a problem. But the way they say it feels entirely accusatory to the person who receives it. And one of the ways, like you mentioned, is direct. Like if the question starts with, did you, or why didn't you, like, that's going to feel
or
like,
are you, or will you?
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I would love your thoughts on this, but I feel like one of the checkpoints is if the word you is the second word in your question, ask it a different way.
I think that's a great rule. I mean, you're right. But part of what makes those closed-ended questions close is the way we frame them, right? So are you, will you, did you, et cetera. And sometimes it's more limited, right? So, you know, is the report ready? Yes or no, kind of yes or no questions. And I really think as a leader, you've got to open up your perspective, right? There's a great quote by Peter Drucker who says, the leader of the past was a person who told stories, but the leader of the future is somebody who asks questions. And to me, that encompasses what we're really describing here, because our skills are actually becoming more complex. What's happening in the workplace is becoming more complex. People no longer respond to just being told what to do. They want to be involved in conversations. Many organizations today need to find a way to get stakeholders involved in shared decision-making. They want to have a voice. They want to feel valued. They want to feel respected. And, you know, and that's only going to continue on as we learn within the organizational context for how to really treat people well and achieve extraordinary results. And positive communication is going to have to be at the heart of that.
It has to, and it goes hand in hand. And I feel like, and I would love your thoughts on this, the current generation of business leaders, which I know spans several generations of people, if we're going to be really technical about it, is in an especially challenging spot because many of us grew up underneath the previous generation where we were just told what to do. And yeah. Like it or not, you were told what to do, you just did it. So we were operationally conditioned on how to communicate. That's how people communicated with us. So that just must be how we communicate. Now, right. The world evolves, generations evolve, expectations evolve, businesses evolve, jobs evolve, tax evolve. So now the way that we were taught to communicate isn't necessarily the right way to communicate all the time with the people who work in our organizations. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's kind of a roller coaster. So the next generation of leaders might be better suited because they've been on both sides of it, but then generations will shift again. And then that generation will, so there'll be like kind of middle generations in a good spot and then others that are not.
That's right.
For the generation of leaders that might've grown up in that more jump how high type environment that now can't lead that way, what techniques or advice or thoughts do you have for helping them bridge that gap and translate how they want to ask a question in their own mind to how their audience needs to hear the question in order to respond appropriately?
Well, I mean, I think it's going to echo kind of what we've been talking about, which is, to me, you have to make the intentional decision to shift your question, right? I call it flipping your question. So if it, in your mind, you may have a question like, you know, is this ready already? You know, have you done your job, right? This may be what's going on. And you have to shift that question now to something different, which may be something like, hey, how, you know, what progress are you making on this project? Or tell me a little bit about where you are on this project that you're working on. So you've got to be approaching it with some sense of curiosity. That's the impulse. So for me, it begins to, the best way of kind of starting to practice it is to go, okay, let me see if I can be curious about what's going on. I'm frustrated. You know, this person seems unhappy. Let me go first explore what's going on with them. Can I make that move? And if you can make that move and be curious, I would put myself a check like, yeah, I'm doing my part for this interaction, because all interactions are co-created and co-constructed with people. You know, we're not the sole participants. So that's, to me, that's the transition. You move from closed-ended to open-ended, and you try to do it as frequently and more often as possible. When you meet people in the hallway, maybe you take a couple seconds to say, hey, tell me a little bit about your weekend. What have you been up to, right? And that's going to start to open up relationships, going to start to open up those problematic moments. Yeah, I mean, it will be, in my mind, it's going to be immediate. Just like if I show up for a meeting and I start the meeting with, here's agenda number one, versus coming up to the meeting and saying, hey, can we go around and quickly share what's one meaningful moment you've had this week at work, just to kind of see where people are at? The interaction is going to be automatically different.
For sure. For sure. You mentioned the performance management conversations previously, and I know that that's something that every leader deals with formally, informally, and across the board. You mentioned that there were a couple of critical techniques associated with that, questioning techniques. Are there one or two that we could share quickly for people whose curiosity might have been piqued by the comment earlier?
Yeah. And I've got my book here in front of you. So I was looking. So in the book, we have a couple things. One of them is we have an agenda for, here's like 12 questions that you need to make sure you ask during performance review. And all of those are open-ended questions, right? So things like, tell me about how your last year has been going. What are some of the highlights for you? What are you most proud of what you've accomplished? These two questions are going to be key. I'm going to tell you why in a second. One question is going to be, what do you see as your real strength, you know, as an employee for us? And what do you think are areas that you need to improve in your roles? Now, those two questions are critical because very often when we have annual evaluations, we have feedback to give to people, right? And as a manager, very often I know in my mind, oh, this person is doing this well, but they really need to be working on these skills, all right? That's kind of in my mind. But the the communication is going to be so much more fruitful if you get the person to share their perspective first. Because very often what I found when I was evaluating my own employees is that the way I saw their areas of improvement was exactly what they thought they needed to work on. Maybe they didn't know how to improve them, right? So if I ask my employee first, what do you think you need to improve on and work on? Then they're going to share that. And it's a much easier conversation than me saying, you know, you've been doing this wrong and I need you to work on this, which, by the way, is not how I would do it. But it kind of changes, it flips the script a little bit. I also really like these questions. They come from Daniel Coyle, who wrote a really nice book on how to write, on how to build like an effective team. And he suggests three questions. So I'll just list them here that you can do as a leader to get feedback. We call it pulling feedback. So to pull feedback from your employees. So you want to use the annual evaluation to give feedback, but very often you also want to use that moment to get some feedback for yourself. Ooh, that's really helpful. So he's got three that I like. One of them is, what is one thing that I currently do as a leader that you would like me to continue doing? Second question, what is one thing that I don't currently do frequently enough that you think I should be doing more often as a leader? And then the third question is, what can I do to help you become even more effective in your role? So you can see the theme is the same. It's open-ended questions, open-ended questions, open-ended questions. And if you can do that in your communication, I mean, you're going to see a drastic improvement, not just at work, but at home. I mean, I guarantee you.
I love all of that. And I love the question, what don't I do frequently enough?
That phrase,
whether people realize it or not, that phrase frequently enough takes the accusation, and in this case, like the counter accusation, out of it. So if I'm a leader and I ask my employee, well, what am I doing wrong? Or what am I missing? Or where am I failing?
Yeah, it's too tough.
Yeah. Unless I've got a great relationship with that employee, they're going to look at me and say nothing at all, because they're not going to risk telling me that I'm wrong. But
exactly.
If I ask, what don't I do frequently enough? Just that phrase takes the risk out of the answer. Because now they're not going to tell me I never do it or that I'm wrong. They're saying, I would appreciate it if this happened more, which for the record could be once, but that's still more. But just that phrase makes such a big difference. So those were great examples. And I appreciate walking you through, and we'll make sure that we point them towards the book and all 12 of the questions that you had in there as well.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Show notes. No, that was awesome. And the next cog in the wheel, or cog is probably not the right word, but the next piece in the model is the affecting piece, right? Am I going
That's correct.
Right order?
So, you are. You're doing fantastic. I think you know it better than I do.
Well, let's not go too far, but that you just hit on exactly where I was going, which is the complimenting piece. So when I read that, there is no doubt that there is power in giving somebody compliments, from bonding to increasing their self-image to lowering resistance and on and on and on and on and on. For me, coming from an investigative interviewing background,
I always had to be
careful with how I did it, because while understanding the value, it had to be credible, it had to be well timed, and it had to be sincere. Like, if it ever felt like a ploy, or if it ever felt like I was BSing, I could torpedo the entire relationship if I wasn't careful, because those conversations, people were looking for a reason not to trust us from hello. So
that's right.
In those conversations, being extra careful with how we develop those bonds and trust were important. So with that long setup out of the way, I would be thrilled if you could please walk us through not only the importance of complimenting, but really the most appropriate techniques to do it. So that way we're more likely to get our desired response and not create some of these unfortunate side effects.
So the quick summary of the principle, I think you put it nicely, is in the model, I argued that when we choose to compliment, we also choose to affect who people are and who they become. It's like has an impact on their sense of self. And that is essentially a fact about communication, which is what I say doesn't just have, it's not just the exchanging of words. I'm not just exchanging information with you. What I say to you can also shape you. It can shape who you think you are, and more importantly, who you become. And so there are a lot of identity, like as a father, I think about that frequently with my children, right? How I talk to my children, I'm not just exchanging information with them. I'm teaching them about who they are along the way. And my words are a mirror for that identity. So remember that the model really was developed to help people think about how they can communicate more positively in their lives, right? And I think more effectively. So another way of thinking is, I make lots of choices every day as a communicator. Sometimes I'm critical, right? Which I can do. It's a method. I can criticize people. But another choice is I can compliment them. So my biggest worry when I really was shaping the model is I really wanted people to understand that communication does affect people. It is not just a way of transmitting information. And obviously, there are places for all of these behaviors. But in general, as a communicator, what if I could move in a direction where I begin to see what people are doing well? So obviously, as you pointed out, we don't want to be disingenuous, you know, or inauthentic in our complimenting. Sometimes, like I do a workshop, people are like, hey, Dr. Merivale, how many compliments should I give to get people to do what I want? That's not at all the impulse of the model. You know, the impulse of the model is to say, as a communicator, you have choices and you can choose what to say or do. Can you make the choice to compliment rather than to criticize? Can you get yourself there? And it's going to be super hard because sometimes our critical selves take over. Is that helping? I want to check in with you a little bit and see if that's making sense in terms of at least the origin of the principle.
Yes.
So then the question becomes, as a leader, what do you do? So first I want to start with a fact. This is a meta study that was done looking at all of the research that had been done for years on employee engagement. And to me, it's like the nugget of wisdom. This author, in reviewing all of these studies, basically says, listen, this is what we know. Anytime you criticize or confront a problem, right, you actually undermine performance. Anytime you compliment or praise or focus on the strength of the employee, you improve performance. So that's, to me, that's the most important lesson. If you're a leader, it's like, okay, well, what's going on? Well, the more I criticize performance, the more likely I am going to undermine it. And the more I celebrate successes, what people are doing well, while giving them feedback. So please, you know, the next behavior is about disclosing. So we have to remember that we have to be able to have hard conversations. We have to be able to tell people what they need to hear to continue to grow and develop, particularly in the context of the workplace, right? I never advocate that you shy away from those conversations. But what I am advocating is if all you do is point out the problem or point out the negative, that performance is going to be suffering. And if you look, I mean, I was just looking with my son. Again, this is a soccer show, sorry, but there's a new Netflix documentary called Following the Manchester City team that won the trebles, you know, last year, three of the big cups, right? It's an awesome documentary. And obviously the coach for that team is Pepe. And if you watch it, you're going to realize everything that comes out of his mouth is positive. Even when they win, he challenges them, but in a very effective way. But when he is, you know, when they're down, he's not putting them down. When he is training them, he is celebrating everything. He is hugging them. He is celebrating them. He's constantly telling them how good they are, how visionary they are, how strong they are, how resilient they are. And if you listen to all the language before the game even starts, all the players are like, we're going to do this. We're going to do that. It's all positive. It really is all positive communication from beginning to end. Extreme performance, in my mind, can only get there when you've got that kind of context. And they dominate it in every way. So that's the kind of principle for me is, as a leader, can you create that kind of environment? So then we get to techniques. So, I mean, with that behavior, to me, it's like, you've got to train yourself, you know, like Friday afternoon. Can you take 1 hour on Friday afternoon and start writing maybe some letters to people who've done some great work? You know, my first gig as a leader,
was actually to be chair of a department that was a hostile workplace. And the dean hired me because like, oh, you do positive communication. Can you help us come create a positive culture here? I was like, yeah, one option is you just blow it up. Yeah, very and you start true. From scratch, right? But the other is the painful road, which we took. And we were successful. But, you know, I remember like when people are in a bad place like that, they're actually hurt. Like they're not doing well. They're hurt as a team and they're hurt as people and they're suffering. So the first thing you really that I had to do was like starting to celebrate successes again, you know, and being able to point out what people were doing well and building on that. So as a leader, to me, the most essential technique that's easy is every week you think of three people, you sit down at your desk and you think of three people that are doing something really pretty great. It has to be authentic to you, to your standards, and you write them a little note. Or you go to their office. So there's three kind of levels of meaning. The top impact of a compliment is when you deliver it face to face. So if you can go to the person and say, hey, I was thinking of you, and I want you to know, man, your hard work on this project is so impressive. You know, you've shown such great leadership skills. I'm so happy you're part of this team. Thanks for everything you've done to get this to this place. Second layer of meaning is going to be writing a note because people get a chance to reread it. And the third is in a public setting. If you do it in a public setting, I recommend that you make this a pattern. Again, not to draw on my own experience, but when I had meetings, I always had on the agenda kudos. And that was to make sure that every meeting I would celebrate whatever had happened during that week because people are attentive, just like my children are attentive to who gets credit for what. You know, we're kind of like that in life. And so you want as a leader to make sure everybody gets a little bit of that share. Hope this is helpful.
It is. It is for me. I truly appreciate it. In that you mentioned going to the next level and finding that balance when you go into the deepened part and how we kind of balance that. Yes, it's great to compliment people all the time because that is going to improve performance. I shouldn't say all the time, often. But I'm sure that at least one person heard that and thought, well, there's times where I still have to provide critical feedback and I can't just tell someone they're doing a great job. I'm doing a great job. Correct. So to kind of bring those two parts of the model together, it would be great if you could walk through that balance of the difficult conversations, providing the necessary critical feedback in a positive way. So that way we're still leveraging what the research has shown us helps turn that performance around over time so we don't have to just blow it up.
That's right. That's right. So my first response is going to be because, you know, I've like what you just said was perfect. Because like, yeah, well, I still have to provide critical feedback. I love that. I love the way you did it. You know, the first thing I would say is, yeah, that's great that you want to do that. The first thing you have to remember is if you do criticize, you're going to undermine performance. So that's the first thing because people think that somehow their criticism will be helpful. If I just tell this person what they're doing wrong, that's going to help them. And what the research is showing is it's not. But if you seize the person doing something well and you express them, you're going to build them. So if performance is your issue, 9 times out of 10, you want to go on the positive side. So now you have to have a hard conversation. You do have to give that person some feedback. So you know, there's some things we all each have personal, but it could be your employees late to work consistently, or there's a project that really was of poor quality and now you need to address it because you don't want that to be happening again. So that falls on the fourth part of the model, which is disclosure. You know, in the model, I argue that when we disclose, we actually have the ability to deepen relationships, which is, it's one of the most controversial behaviors really of the model, because it's the one that leads us to closeness, right? It's the one that leads us to getting a little closer to the people around us. So from a technical standpoint, if you're going to have a hard conversation with people, I kind of have a, you know, it's kind of what I did in the training a couple of weeks ago. I have a structure, and that structure is going to be one, begin with questions. So we go back to asking questions. You know, what are your thoughts on this report? How might you improve it? What are your, you know, what are you trying to accomplish with this? You know, here's my feeling about the impact. I need you to, you know, improve it in this way. So step one is questions. The second is disclosure. So disclosure would be your ability to share neutrally what the problem is. So the leap we make that's a problem is, let's say I have an employee that's being consistently late. Now I'm frustrated because they're not at their desk doing their job, right? And then what I start to do in my head is I start to transform the behavior, which is being late to work, and I apply it to that person, which is maybe they're being lazy or they're not a professional or et cetera. So I've got now these negative labels. And when I talk to them, instead of addressing the behavior, I'm addressing the personality. Is that kind of making sense? And that puts the person on the defensive because now they're being attacked. And if you are attacking the person, they're going to be defensive. That is just the way we work. And they're going to be defensive in different ways. Some people will counterattack and some people will withdraw. They'll listen to you, but they're going to close their arms and nothing's going to be getting through. And so you're not going to really have an impact. So the key technique there and level kind of stage two of the conversation is being able to describe neutrally the data that you have, right? So if it's laziness, it would be simply as saying, you know, in the last 5 days, you've been coming to work 30 minutes late. That's a fact. That's not an accusation on the person. That is a data point. And when you are late, you know, when you are late, what that does is that means the people who are calling can't get any help in our office as a result. So there's an impact, or it affects me in this way. You know, when you're not in the office, then suddenly I'm getting phone calls that I have to handle, which means I can't do my job within the office. So now you've described the behavior and the problem. So the third step is going to be to listen, which is one of the behaviors of positive communication we haven't had a chance to get to, but really critical. And really go on an exploration with the person about, you know, what might be good ways of moving forward. So trying to outline some strategy. So for me, if you have to have a hard conversation, that's how I would map it out. Ask some questions to discover. Be in a position of discovery. Share, always share your concerns in a neutral way by pointing out the data that you have. And then third way is to listen. And obviously, you can always provide suggestions, right? So that's not in there, but you're always welcome. Like if you look at a report, I mean, as a teacher, I've got to give students feedback all the time and I have to be very precise. I need you to improve in these ways, right? So when you think about your writing, here's what you can do to improve your writing. If you think about your public speaking, here's what you need to improve your public speaking. And now the advice is geared towards the behavior rather than the person, which is going to help that relationship.
Which is, I couldn't emphasize how important that is enough. And one of the most common mistakes I see leaders make, and I'm not being very positive by calling it a mistake, but it's too late. I already said mistake. By immediately turning the problem into a person. And that's naturally how our brains work, I guess. But you know, they can't come on time. Therefore, they don't care about my business and they don't respect me.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. Well,
yeah, that's exactly the leap people make.
That's on the realm of possibilities. Like technically, that's an option. They also could have a car in the shop. They also could have a six-year-old son who's learning to tie his shoes and hasn't been able to get out of the house on time in the last 3 weeks. Not that I have personal experience with that example at all. But so taking that immediate leap, well, they're late to work. They don't respect me. Whoa. Let's back up about 487 steps, separate the problem from the person, and look at resolving the problem as opposed to prescribing this negative attitude towards the person. So amen. And thank you for sharing that. You mention listening, and this being a listening oriented show, I want to make sure we get to that, but I'm going to stick to the track that we've been on just because I really like the wheel and I was hoping we'd have the chance to get through it. So giving encouraging people is next on the wheel. And I feel like that ties in really well to the complimenting and some of the other things that we've spoken through. So to try to leave a couple of minutes to really dive into listening before we get there, are there really a few key concepts that people should understand about the power of giving and encouraging others? You know, you mentioned the Manchester City, Pepe always being encouraging and always talking positive, whether they're winning or losing, but anything else worth adding there at this point in the conversation?
So again, the principle, I'm going to do it very quickly, you know, says that when we encourage, we have the ability to give the support people need to succeed, really, and to overcome challenges that we all face in everyday life. So even in the workplace where there's suffering taking place, people may lose a loved one, they may have a hardship with a sick child. So there are things going on in people's lives. So in general, I would say there's three behaviors that really matter. Those map the research. One is the ability to give people meaningful advice at the right time. We call that instrumental support. And I would never underestimate the power you have as a leader to give people something meaningful. I've studied memorable conversations and what we call peak communication, which are the conversations that we have that people most remember in their lives that had a positive impact on them. And I can promise you, so many of these moments are bosses telling the person we interviewed some advice that has stuck with them for their whole career. Okay. So if you've got something meaningful to share, you'd be impressed by how much that can go a long way. The second is what we call emotional support. So if people are in distress, you have to find a way to alleviate that distress. And that can be simply by being present, by asking some questions, but sometimes by offering tangible help. And then the last one is what we call esteem support. So if people are down after a project that they've been working on that maybe they failed at, you know, they're going to lose confidence. So you kind of have to find a way to re-energize them. And that's what Pepe is so good at doing and what these coaches are so good at doing is, and what was so exciting in watching him actually is that when the team won is when he was the hardest on them. And when the team lost is when he was the most gentlest on them. And that to me was a really interesting contrast because you might expect the opposite. Yeah. So that's a good quick summary. If you can do these three things, you're gonna already be making an impact.
I love it. Thank you. So you mentioned listening. Let's dive into listening. Based on your research, your techniques, where are our biggest opportunities to really improve how we impact others through our listening?
Yeah. So the last behavior of the model is this idea that when we listen, we have the ability to transcend our differences. So, you know, I know we're kind of closing the show here. So I'll give you a quick tip. Okay. Quick tip for listening. If you can just do this with me, Michael. So take your right hand and make a really tight fist like this. Imagine this is me and you. We're having a hard interaction. We're getting into a conflict. We have difference, you know, political, whatever. And as we approach each other, we're already tight. We're already not doing well. To me, listening is this. You take your right hand and you very slowly open it. So the palm faces up very slowly like this. Ooh, doesn't that feel better? That's the whole story of listening. Listening is all about opening your hand. And that saves me all the time. You know, when I'm in a hard meeting and it's not going well, what I do is I take my right hand, I put it underneath the desk, and I just tell myself, hey, Julian, open your hand a little bit like here. You're getting tight, you know, and see if you can discover, because it's easy to listen when we want to. It's so much harder when we don't, when people have different opinions or when a meeting is not going well, that you want to do the exact opposite, right? So you want to be even looser when it becomes more difficult because the tighter you are, the more likely you are to not respond effectively or positively. So that would be my short synopsis of how to do listening.
I love it. And honestly, I love the act of opening your closing and opening your hand in a difficult situation. And one of the things that lots of people talk about this, I know it's not unique, but that we'll talk about is like, instead of focusing on reading your counterpart's behavior, listen to your own. Because as your emotions shift, how your body responds begins to shift. So if we can identify how our body is responding, we can likely identify how our emotions are changing and control them or adapt them much quicker. And many times we get that muscle tension. If it's in our jaw, if it's in our hands, if it's in our feet, we lock our knees straight, we cross our legs really hard, you know, whatever it might be. So that unlocking behavior can literally help create a physiological response that helps slow us down and open us up. Because you're right, the more difficult the conversation is, the more important it is to listen. The more potentially offended I might be, the more important it is to learn. And you talked so much about curiosity earlier. And as human beings, we're not wired to be curious. So we have to force ourselves to be, well, we are wired to be curious, but not in these hard conversations, but more wired to be defensive. Allow me to clarify. So forcing ourselves to get back into the curiosity when we feel defensive is important. there's the old, you know, traditional active listening model, maintain eye contact.
Sure.
All those things are good, fine. But in your experience, especially during difficult conversations, when emotions rise, when there are conflicts, in addition to opening up the hand, which I love, and I'm going to start using that as an example. I think that's a great technique that is small. Get your hand under the table. Nobody else has to know you're doing it. So you don't look weird in front of a group of people in the conference.
Yeah, you just put your table underneath the desk. Yeah.
I think that that's effective. Are there other techniques that you have seen successful to help people kick themselves back into curiosity when everything about our physiology is telling us get defensive?
I mean, it's, you know, breathing.
Yes.
I mean, you know, definitely I would include some breathing in there.
Yeah.
Especially if you feel like it's kind of boiling up, you know, your emotions, time a little bit away. It's why I recommend this physical gesture, a little bit of self-talk, right? So you have to be able to say, okay, let me take a deep breath here. Let me slow down, because interaction starts to speed up. When we get anxious, actually our reaction, it all feels more fast than what it's actually occurring. So we want to slow down the interaction and really put ourselves. So how do we hijack ourselves back into becoming curious? To me, it's a physical thing again, right? So research shows, for example, that we can make ourselves listen more effectively simply by leaning in. So obviously I can withdraw, but I can also move in. And just the act of leaning in actually creates already a better position for listening. So there are a lot of techniques, you know, there are some models that we introduce in the book. For example, how you set up the context if you have a difficult interaction. Are you preventing intrusion? Are you leaving your phone out, et cetera? When the person is talking, are you willing to even write down a few things? Like, I have found the most powerful way of being a good listener is to write down what people say and then to check in with them and say, hey, this is what you just said. I want to make sure I get it right. Is this what you mean by that? Or I don't really understand how you said that. Tell me more about what that means. So really exploring the other person's perspective. It's so tempting, you know, when you have a hard conversation to be the speaker. It's so much harder to put yourself and be the explorer and to really understand, seek to understand the other person's perspective. Doesn't mean you can't express yourself. It just changes the dynamics. And then finally, you know, obviously developing your ability for being empathetic and developing your ability to restate what the person has said and to check for meaning is going to make a big difference. So if you can just do those things, I mean, open your hand, right? Ask questions for curiosity and then be able to do that. It's going to make, I think it's going to have an impact.
I love all of that.
Michael, yes. I hate to do this. Sorry. I know you said I could do it, so I'm going to do it, but I have another meeting to get to. So I thought I would at least let you know that.
Oh, I appreciate it. You know, I was just about to wrap it up. I was going to thank you and wrap it up right here. So
perfect.
I appreciate you letting me know. So we'll do it real quick. Julian, that was fantastic. Thank you so much. Everything you just said about listening was completely tangible and actionable. This has been a great conversation. I know you squeezed in the interview for us today. Thank you so very much. There are people who are definitely listening right now and wanting to know where they can connect and learn more from you. So before we go, where can people find your book? And where can they connect with you to learn more from you?
Well, the book, The Positive Communication for Leaders, is available on Amazon today. You can go get it. It's really affordable. It's $24, I believe, right now. Please stay in touch with me. I am on LinkedIn, where I share some free content very frequently. You can also go to my website at www.julianmerivel.com. where I'm launching a few new courses that would be accessible to develop your skills, including one that's going to come out soon on leading hard conversations. So please stay in touch with me, and I look forward to connecting and continuing to build connection with you.
Fantastic. Thank you so very much. We'll include all of those links in the show notes. I really appreciate
you so much, Michael,
sharing your time and all your expertise. I took a full page of notes while you were talking, so I'm grateful for all of it. Please stay safe out there. I look forward to keeping in touch and talking to you again soon. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Michael. Have a great rest of the day. Bye.
Dr. Miravel, thank you for such a wonderful conversation. I appreciate you sharing all of your time and so many insights from your work. We will absolutely share links to your work and your book so people can continue to learn from all of your research and all that you've done. Thank you so much. There's so many valuable takeaways here. I mean, just to try to list a few on the way out, just thinking about the importance of not prescribing behaviors to people in any given situation. The fact that all of our interactions truly are shaped by the questions that we ask. The critical fact that's important to remember, listening transcends differences. And of course, how we communicate with people helps them define who they are and shapes who they become. Very powerful thoughts, important for us to remember as we continue to search for those better communication decision-making frameworks. Thank you again, Dr. Miravel, for sharing all of your time today. And thank you all for taking the time to be here and listen. And hopefully, again, you're taking more notes than I am, or at least as many notes as I am during some of these fantastic conversations. Thank you all so much. Before we go, let's thank our sponsors one more time, HumanTel. Head over to humantel.com and enter the code INCLUSIVE25 for 25% off their best-in-class self-paced online training in order to learn how to observe somebody's facial expressions and nonverbal communication for indications that their emotions are shifting. Then we can use that intelligence in real time to begin to develop an understanding of what people are actually thinking and feeling and how that impacts our ability to achieve our goals in real time. I've done their training. I vouch for it. Please head over to humantel.com and enter that code INCLUSIVE25. If you're a professional interviewer, please head over to certifiedinterviewer.com. Learn more about the certified forensic interviewer designation, some very important evolutions coming there shortly. Also, membership in the organization, benefits, groups, networking, resources, everything you would want to know over there at certifiedinterviewer.com. Please check it out. And while you're online, please head over to inquasive.com. where you can learn more about the programs that our clients ask us to facilitate and customize for their senior leadership, sales teams, and HR teams to teach them how to apply strategic and ethical observation and persuasion techniques that will encourage people to share more sensitive information under vulnerable circumstances in the face of perceived consequences. All that and more over at inquasive.com. Thank you all again for continuing to show up week in and week out. We truly appreciate you listening to these conversations. Please like the show, share the show, follow the show, let your friends know about it, and share your feedback with us. What would you like to hear more or less of? Who would you like to see on the show? Maybe previous guests. Who would you like to see back on the show? Please let us know. We want to give you more of what you want to listen to and what you want to learn. Thank you all very much for taking the time. Please stay safe. Take care of each other. I'll see you next time.